morning.
Good morning.
We're not ready to start. There's still a few people missing physically here. So.
Okay.
If we're quiet, it's not that we're not on the call.
Okay.
My first step today, I have to watch my mother say, my family, I'm talking about my first step. Textbook?
Yeah, no.
My father's mother says, and I say everything except they did not mention anything. And no baking soda, nothing that would make it.
Make it rise.
So I went full trouble and ended up high like a rock. And we all went to the
race. Right.
And I never baked again. Because I lived near, which is the Berkeley and Ed's corner. I sparkled full of trouble.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Pick up whatever I like without all the problems. Oh my gosh.
Thank you. You brought your book.
Thank you. How old is it?
We'll give Joe another minute, and we'll have to start.
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll be starting in about 1 minute.
Okay.
We're waiting for one more.
Okay, I may have to leave because I have an appointment, but I think I can make it.
I understand.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Believe me, I do too.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Would you pass this to Joe? Good morning, all. We'll start with the L'shem Yichud, and then I will explain the papers in front of you. L'shem Yichud kud shabrechu ishkin tepid hiluur himu ud hiluur himu le'akta l'shem yudhei bavavhe v'yichuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael limud Torah mitzvah la'asok Torah mitzvah Vayehino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu kenedei aleinu maasei yadeinu kenedeihu. Today is a little bit different than we've been doing. One of my students is a master teacher, and she was involved teaching the person who developed the PowerPoint. Her name is Hannah. She's online now on the recording. She's been teaching children the Aleph Bet for 30 years.
Wow.
And she's a master teacher. And she also taught adults the Aleph Bet. And the way she teaches is to involve you in all of your senses, your vision, your hearing, and your taste. She loves to cook, or maybe she doesn't, I don't really know, but she cooks. And she cooks very well. How I know that is from talking to her students. So she sent me her menus, because every letter has a food. Every letter has some aspect. Every holiday has a food that is unique to the holidays. And what we will be doing from this point forward is, as we do a letter, we will add to it. But we've already gone through half the alphabet. So today, we're going to utilize these menus, which not everybody on the recording has access to, because I haven't sent them to them. But so I'll be doing some things together. But if we start with the first page of the menu, and while the pages are not numbered, they are put in the order that's appropriate.
The alphabet?
To the way we have been studying the alphabet. So as you see, the title is Barbara's Recipe Collection, because Barbara's was her name before. And she's now known as Hannah, and she's been through a series of names that are appropriate, because as she rises spiritually, her names needed to change. So the question is, this is about apples and honey. And she, as it's, I'm going to read it, as a child's first Torah lesson, it was an Eastern European tradition to write the Hebrew alphabet in honey on a child's slate. And if you remember the slates, or you have an image of the slates, it's basically a chalkboard where the child has his own small chalkboard, and he writes and then he erases to go on to the next lesson. But in the first day, when he's 3 years old, which is when children were taught to read, they were taught the alphabet, they would be taught how to write the aleph. And then they would put, the teacher would go around and put honey in the shape of the aleph over what they had written. And then they would, this swab of honey was placed on the page with the Torah verses, and it was given to the child to lick off symbolically, but basically taste-wise, that the study of Torah would be as sweet to their minds as this honey is to their mouth. And this was taught, was told, was reinforced to every child. When you learn, we've spoken earlier, you need to learn with your muscles. That's why I give you homework every week, even though I don't mention it every week. You learn a new letter, you've got to write it over and over again, that same shape, because it's called muscle memory. And it reinforces your mind memory. And it's reinforced with taste. So if you are someone who likes to bake, these recipes are effective. The way Hannah would teach is she would bake it before the class, she'd bring it into the class, and as she's teaching, people would be eating the item and reinforcing their muscle memory with their taste memory, with their mind memory, and the learning was much more effective. I'm not a baker. I'm not about to do this. But feel free, because these tastes, if you're eating these things while you're practicing your letters, meaning practicing either reading it or writing it, you're going to get that reinforcement to your mind memory with the taste memory. In modern day, the customs have evolved to eating apples and honey and other sweet treats at Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. And that's become the temple in Louisiana where Hannah lives. And the temple that she attends is named Temple Sinai. Honey appears in several recipes in my Hebrew class collection with the often quoted notation, honey appears in Jewish recipes on Rosh Hashanah, on the Jewish New Year, and is eaten until Simchat Torah, rejoicing in the Torah, dancing with the Torah, symbolic of our wishes for a sweet year. There are the 22 days of holidays in Tishrei, Rosh Hashanah, through Yom Kippur, through Sukkot, through Hoshana Rabbah, through Shmini Atzeret, through Simchat Torah. There are 22 days. These are all holidays. It is the custom in most of the Ashkenazi communities and has become the custom in the Sephardic communities, and I'm not sure if it wasn't also true in the Sephardic historically, that the challah that you eat at every meal would be dipped in honey. It would be dipped in salt, like we do each week for Shabbat, but it's also dipped in honey all through those 22 days. And it's the same idea, reinforcing that we're looking forward to a sweet year. According to Rashi and other Torah commentators, the Torah reference to honey is to date or fig honey, not bee honey. And the milk source is from goats, all of which Hashem gave in regard to the land of Israel, with the seven species of produce: wheat, barley, grapes, figs, pomegranates, olives, and date honey. An additional reference comes from the book of Exodus, where it says the land is flowing with milk and honey. The date palm symbolizes the righteous person, the tzaddik, or the tzaddeket, of whom the Torah states, they will flourish like the date palm. The Talmud teaches that dates heal intestinal illnesses. That, by the way, that is a good traditional, natural healing, to use date honey if you have an upset stomach. The honey served with apples for today's lesson is date honey that she purchased in Houston, because there's no kosher restaurants in this small community, or the community she lives in. I don't know. It's not a big community because it's not New Orleans, but it's right near a very well known lake, because the name of the city she lives in is Lake Charles. The Torah states, they, the righteous people, will flourish like the date palm. And the Talmud teaches that dates heal the intestinal illnesses. She purchased this at Kroger's in Houston. And there have been times when I prepared my own date honey by adding water to dates, cooking and stirring constantly until the desired consistency is reached. So you can really tell Hannah is a cook, a chef. She I don't know anybody else who would make their own date, honey. And there are two... She's prepared a second honey treat that's made with bee honey. And she's asking the question, why do you think I prepared the bee recipe along with the date honey for today's lesson? And what is the lesson about Rosh Hashanah? Why do we need bees? And you're going to find the answer by looking up the Hebrew word for bee, which I'm not going to tell you, but it'll give you the hint to the answer to the question. And if next week you want to ask the question, what was the answer, I will explain it then. But it's good to make the effort yourselves. The next page, if you look on the top left, after it says the Aleph, and you see the way the English is spelled in two different ways. Orez is the Hebrew letters Aleph, Resh, Zion. But if we were to say those letters with their root vowels, it would be A, Re, Za. What is a root vowel? When you spell the name of the word, which is the name of the letter, there are vowels underneath the letters that make the sound of the name of the letter. So an aleph has three letters, aleph, lamed, pei. And it's pronounced Aleph. But if you have root vowels, the Aleph has the A sound. A. The Lamed has the La sound. But when we say Aleph, it's not La, it's Le. Ale. The third letter, the Pe, is not a Pe, it's a Fe, the F sound, and there's no real vowel to it. It's the Shva, the two dots, one over the other, that are silent. So when you see this word Orez, it's not the way we pronounce it with its root vowels. But it is by changing the vowels, we change the sound. And by changing the sound, we make the word that has meaning. Now, this recipe is for snow white coconut rice pudding. Now, why do you think it has this name? And you can see underneath, you English letters, it's Orez. You can see how to pronounce it. And we are going to be working with this today in pronunciation. So, Joe, look at the three letters and pronounce them.
Resh and Zion. The Z letter.
The Z letter, correct. Aleph, Resh, Zion. But that's not the way you read the word, is it? How do you read the word?
Orez.
Now, read those same letters with their root vowel. They're not written there. It's hard to visualize. But if you start to visualize, You said the word Aleph. So what is the sound of the first letter? Ah. Now, the next letter is the Resh. What is the sound of the first letter of the Resh? No. Ray. Resh. Okay. Yes, it's an R sound. But you have to put a vowel to the R sound. You, in this case, it's an E, O-R-E. But in the root vowel, it's R-E. If you look on this page, you'll see the vowels, remember? The vowels are down here. So you're trying to... I'm trying to get you to visualize, because when you read Hebrew outside of the Siddur, and out, there are no vowels, there's no dots. So if you can visualize it, you can sound out a word if you're reading the Hebrew without vowels. And that's the purpose of this. And it's very slow exercise, but it's something you need to practice if you want to improve your Hebrew reading. Trudy, you have the same subject, but you have an advantage. You speak Yiddish, which is Hebrew letters. So, read the word. Orez. Rez. Correct. But it would actually be Areza. Zion. Za. But at the last letter of a word, you're very used to not pronouncing the vowel.
That's why I was thinking. Orez.
Correct.
Yeah. About.
Correct. Sheila? Read the word.
Always.
Very good. So, I have never tasted Snow White coconut rice pudding because I don't happen to care for coconut. It has an aftertaste for me. The next page has seven letters. But one of those letters is a vowel holder, vowel replacement. Which letter is that? It's the second letter. Oof. Manit, which means cranberry. And this is a recipe for cranberry pumpkin bread. And I think you'll find that just even the sound of that makes it taste good. But notice at the end of the title, it says parv. And what does it mean?
Need the milk, no meat.
It means it can be used with both. So if you're eating meat, you can eat cranberry pumpkin bread that's parv. But in the list of items, there may be some people will add milk to the bread, in which case it's no longer parv. It's
milkage.
So you, and it reinforces the idea you have to be aware of what is used to cook things in order to know whether you can eat it at that particular meal or not. The next word down is kara. I don't know the meaning of kara, but pumpkin is delaat. And the last item is lechem. That one I know. Lechem is bread. So, say again.
You say a prayer for bread.
Lechem min ha'aretz. That's right. The bread from the earth. Joe, read all four words.
Eat soup. Hurrah. Lechem.
It's three of the four. First one is uk manit.
Oh, hurrah. The la'at.
Good. Sheila.
Uk manit. Hurrah. The la'at. Lechem.
Good. Trudy. One, two, three, four. Let me see the page.
I have it like this. This the right page?
Yes. You're reading this word first.
The pumpkin one?
Mm-hmm. Let me help you here.
Let me hear something. I'm used to having a doctor's seat, but.
I know. It's because Yiddish is not Hebrew.
Yeah, well. And the next one is left.
Very good.
What else? I pushed off above. I pressed. God bless you.
Very good. It's very difficult for a Yiddish speaker or reader because many times in Yiddish, you have just the sound of the letter without a vowel in the middle of the word. And that does happen in Hebrew, but not as often. So it is hard for that.
I'll have to get to the S-T.
Mm-hmm.
That's Hebrew.
That's
Hebrew.
Yes.
That's about the English. Don't go.
Mm-hmm. And you'll notice in the next page, it's the same, except it's dairy.
Before we go on, one is, pumpkin's made of two words. Excuse me.
It could be. And that could be the meaning. I don't really know.
Okay.
One of the things about vocabulary is when you use the things, you learn the vocabulary. Since I don't cook, I've never seen the word cranberry in Hebrew before. I've never seen it because I don't cook. I just eat it. And when you eat it, the sounds have disappeared anyway.
Just the munching sound.
Going on to the next page, which is the letter Bet. One egg is Beitza. Plural of eggs, Beitzim. Beitzim, correct. Yiddish and Hebrew are similar. The mayonnaise. Beitza, Beitzim, the mayonnaise. Now, does anybody want to tell me what the mayonnaise is?
Mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise, exactly. Why is it Hebrew word exactly the same sound as the English word?
Mayonnaise is a butter in it.
Mayonnaise is they didn't make mayonnaise in ancient times, in biblical times, because mayonnaise spoils. They're not going to mix something and then they put it in the refrigerator. So it's not something they use. So when Hebrew was being reconstituted, they had to develop a word for mayonnaise. Mayonnaise is a mixture of different foods. So they took on the English word because the whole world knows mayonnaise. Because wherever there's a refrigerator, people have used mayonnaise as a taste enhancer because it's quite heavy in calories, meaning fat. And fat is a flavor enhancer.
Has anyone ever had homemade mayonnaise?
No.
I'm sure Hana has. I'm not. I have never.
Well, now you... Anything you buy is just a shame.
Now, if you read at the bottom of the page, because these are the kinds of things that Hana would add to. It's not just a recipe. She's teaching as she does. I'm telling you, she's really a master teacher. Jewish customs. The egg is a symbol of mourning and consolation. Mourners traditionally eat eggs at the Suldat Havra'ah, the meal after a burial. Eggs are also eaten at the meal before the fast of Tisha B'Av. And before, as part of the Passover Seder, as a sign of mourning for the loss of the temple and the loss of the Paschal sacrifice. Hard-boiled eggs are eaten at the Passover Seder to symbolize spring and the season of rebirth. A roasted egg placed upon the Seder plate, but not eaten, is a symbol of a second sacrifice, once performed at this season, called the Hagigah, the festival offer, that was done in the temple. Contrary to contemporary teachings, the egg did not make an appearance on the Passover Seder plate because of the influence of the egg in the Easter season. Well, most times today, I've never really heard a question, why is there an egg on the table? I heard an explanation from the Kabbalah. The Seder plate has six items on it. The one that is connecting to the Sefirah of Gevurah is the egg, the Betzah. And the reason the egg is used is it's the only food that as you cook it, the longer you cook it, the harder it gets. Every other food, the longer you cook it, it deteriorates. It becomes soft. It becomes, even if it's a solid when you start, it becomes mush the longer you cook it, or it burns up completely. The egg never burns up. You just keep cooking it longer and longer and longer. It just gets harder and harder and harder. And that's a symbol of its internal energy, which is judgment, power, strength, the Sefirah of Gevurah. Now, what food relates relates to the traveling in the desert?
Manna.
And what does it start with?
Mem.
But look at the two letters that make up the word. It's not manna, is it? It's man. In the Bible, in the Torah, it says man. It doesn't say manna. What would it take for the nun to have a vowel under it? Since it's the last letter, it doesn't have the vowel. So we would need to add another letter. Man would become mana if I add a hay, or I add an olive, or I add an ayin. But in the Bible, it's just the two letters, mem and nun. I'm sorry?
Oh my gosh, they have one.
The Homentashen is poppy seeds, and we'll discuss that when we get there. But look at where the idea of the mana being connected to the mem. Hannah is telling us when she was working with the children, she took a cupcake and called it a mana cake. And she did that at Sukkot. So in just those few letters, we've done Rosh Hashanah, and we have done Sukkot. Jewish customs. When the Israelites found themselves without food after leaving Egypt, Hashem rained down bread from heaven, which sustained them during their 40 years of wandering in the desert. The Torah compares this food to coriander seeds with a taste like wafers in honey. The Israelites named it man, which means, what is it? Mana symbolizes the Jewish people's infancy, when Hashem nurtured them as a mother nurtures her child. It also represents spiritual as well as physical sustenance. The blessing that one says for mana is not the same as we say for bread. We say a blessing. We all know the first six words, Baruch Atah Hashem. Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. Then there's something at the end that applies to the specific blessing you are making. So if we're eating bread, it's Lechem Min Haaretz. Bread from earth. But when the Jews ate manna, they said a blessing. But it was not lechem min haaretz. It was lechem min hashamayim, bread from heaven. So if you're going to eat manna cakes in your Sukkot, you can consider saying lechem min Hashemayim. Just consider it, because the food is being made from physical items, so it's still from the earth. But it's good to understand that you're connecting it consciously to heaven. You're consciously connecting it to God, and that's really the reason we say blessings. One of the reasons we say blessings is to connect our consciousness away from the physical act of eating to remembering that God provides this food. Now, the next one is you absolutely must make.
I've done that.
So I'm going to let you pronounce the words, Joe. Very good. But I didn't know your name was Joe.
I was thinking out loud. I'm sorry.
It's quite all right.
Thank you for help.
But if you were speaking French, you would say chocolat with a T, not a D. So the question you can ask yourself, why when they reconstituted Hebrew, why was chocolate, which has a T in English, a T in French, why is it spelled with a D? Chocolate.
Well, what was the other, what was the native language that the person had?
It was Russian. I don't know if Russian, if the word chocolate has a D on the end in Russia or not. Yeah, it could actually have been a country that's in the news. Ukraine. It could have been his native language because there were a lot of Jewish people who came to Israel in the early 1900s. That came from Ukraine rather than from Russia, because Ukraine was closer to Poland, closer to the where the Jewish ghettos were, or what we call the shtetl, or the Pale. All of these terms. It was called the Pale because it was. They didn't know what country they belonged to. Sometimes they were Polish, sometimes they were Russian, but they were always Jewish. And I also point out the last item on the page where it says confectionery sugar. It contains corn syrup. And can you have corn syrup on Passover? Well, of course it depends, because a lot of people eat bread on Passover, God forbid.
Oh, well, no, I know.
What, do you know what makes, on Passover, you know Coca-Cola has a different bottle top. One is yellow and one is the regular white or whatever. What makes Coke kosher for Passover is they use corn syrup instead of sugar, instead of wheat. And that was developed in the 20s. No, it's corn sugar instead of wheat. You may be right. That's probably what it is. Corn sugar, again, you're right. It depends on your observance, because there are some people who say corn is okay to eat on Passover, and others say no. Depends on your community. Don't get me confused.
You want to ask me if I ate beans and rice on Passover, I think, if I remember. And I said yes, and I think you said good.
It's Sephardic.
It is Sephardic. And that's why I said good. The Reish. Rimon. Limon is the Hebrew word for pomegranate. Pomegranates are one of the seven species that Israel is famous for. And what's really unique about the pomegranate is every pomegranate is supposed to have 613 seeds. So if you cut one open and count them, you're supposed to find 613 seeds.
Want to do that?
Yeah.
I have done it. And we have corrupted the species. They no longer have 613 seeds. But I did it to find out and came to understand that, first off, these pomegranates don't come from Israel. They're grown in Mexico or California. So I've never had a pomegranate that's grown in Israel, and it may very well have 613 seeds. Reading the Jewish customs, the pomegranate's red fruit is topped by what looks like a crown. Solomon's coronet was folded or modeled on the pomegranate's crown. Inside are hundreds of red edible seeds, but chew them well. The pulp and rind are not edible. According to Talmudic Midrash, there are 613 seeds within a pomegranate, corresponding to the number of mitzvot prescribed in the Torah. Because of its decorative form, the fruit has been a popular motif in Jewish art. Bells shaped like pomegranates, together with lily designs, adorn the temple columns and also the hem of the high priest's robe. In time, the Hebrew word for pomegranates, rimonim, became the generic term for the decorative silver metal ornaments crowning the Torah rollers, the top of the Torah scroll. In the Song of Songs, Shir HaShirim, "Come, my beloved, let us see if the pomegranates are in bloom." The rabbis comment, "These are the children who are busy learning the Torah. They sit in rows like pomegranate seeds. Children are the crowns of the Torah, adorning it just as silver rimonim adorn the top of the Torah scroll. Thus, the gleaming red pomegranate seeds remind us that we must be attentive to study Torah. Good students are said to model their study habits upon the pomegranate, eating only the good fruit, but discarding the bitter peel." And hopefully I'm only teaching you the good stuff and not the bitter peel. The letter He. Azne Haman, Fomentash. Jewish customs. Fomentashen, literally Haman's pockets, are pastries traditionally eaten on Purim. They represent the bribe suffering this corrupt villain's pockets. Usually, homentashen are filled with mon, poppy seeds, which sounds much like Haman, as well as mana in Ashkenazi Hebrew. Other names for this Purim delicacy are Ozne Haman, Haman's ears, Orechi de Aman, which is Italian, and Hamasoren, Dutch, a name allegedly derived from the old practice of cutting off a criminal's ears before hanging him. At the end of the Book of Esther, Haman and his 10 sons are hanged. Sometimes this pastry is called Haman's hat, because it is shaped like the triangular hat that was supposedly worn by Haman. We really don't have time to learn anymore, but I wanted to demonstrate this. And each letter we learn starting next week, I will add it. We've gone through not all of the letters that we've done, but next week I'll bring you more each time. And I expect something to be brought back, but make sure it's in a kosher kitchen that you cook it. That's a joke. Obviously, you're going to cook it in your own kitchen if you do. But I think you'll find the information that Hannah has prepared and tied to the letters helpful in learning the letters. Does anybody have any questions? No, it's the same one, but it's very different. The recipe is very versus part. Are there any questions on the conference call?
No, thank you.
You all have a beautiful day.
You too. Shalom.